I would use your message. If you're hurting, just know you're not alone. Reach out to the people who are, reach out to people you love. Know that there is, it's temporary, it's gonna move. When you feel that there's hopelessness is a tricky thing. Because when you feel hopeless, you can't get out of hopelessness, but it is a mindset that even if you can't get out of it in the moment, give yourself time, give yourself the love. If you can't figure it out, get the help of other people who can support you to get out of it. And you will move out of it. It's going to take time. Hopelessness is not reality. It's a feeling that's going to move.
Do you need encouragement to turn tragedies into your own triumphant life story? If so, this podcast is for you. Listen to powerful guests who have persevered through challenges so you can gain strength to build your championship life. The host of Professor of Perseverance Podcast, Dr. James Perdue.
Hey, it's that time again. And welcome to the Professor of Perseverance Podcast. I am the Professor of Perseverance himself, a.k.a. what? Dr. James. That's it. Forget my own name. So I get that sometimes going on every now and again. So today our topic, our guest, and we deal with people that's overcome some type of struggle, some type of difficulty, and has won and kicked butt on the other side and living life to the fullest. So, hey, also before I get going, I want to thank Leo and Margaret for coming in and watching today. Hey, thank you. They caught one earlier from talking about the guys from Don and Hutch, where Hutch had died for 18 minutes, and Don and others brought him back to life. One of the 9% to make it. So they've got to watch that. So if you didn't catch it, hey, go back and catch it later on. Hey, let's go to get started. Today, our guest, man, not only was he an American's Got Talent finalist, and we'll find out what that involved in for him to do that, not only was that, but he somehow come up with this COVID thing. You know, some of us, we hear about it, but this is my first time actually finding out more personally about it. So, but not only get the COVID, he won, but he was a month in a coma and 88 days total in the hospital. And he is the author of the book, which is up here, author of a COVID story. All right. And we're going to welcome, let me get this button right here, David Paris. Thank you for showing up. And there's your book blocking both of us.
So. Well, I can't complain about the book blocking both of us at the moment, but thank you so much for having me. And it was such a pleasure and hearing some of the other stories about perseverance and your story. And I'm just honored to be a part of what you're putting out there in the positivity. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. You know, that's the main theme here is we want to show people it's possible to get through these difficult times and then be able to live a life that you deserve or want or both. So, man, I like the cover there. It's a nice looking cover.
So. Thank you. Originally, I asked the illustrator to do something completely different. And without telling me, he didn't listen to a thing I said.
There you go.
And then he showed this to me and I was just like, oh, this is way better than what I had in mind.
That's right. That's why they get paid the big bucks to do that.
That's right. Wow. Yeah. It's amazing how an artist sometimes goes off on their own. And sometimes you work with artists and you're like, oh, these artists, they just have their own mind. And then sometimes they hit gold and you're like, okay, that's why they're the artist, right?
That's right. Of course, I hadn't had COVID. And again, thankfully, nobody in my family has. But I don't know if I would have come up with this cover as well. So anybody that's going to be on the podcast itself listening, it's called A COVID Story by David Paris. So get you a copy and check it out. So, all right, David.
Yeah. So thank you so much. I called it a COVID story because I'm just telling my story and not at all trying to tell everyone's story. And although it's singular in nature, I absolutely think it's telling a lot about what it means to have the community support you and what it means to face some. I was in a coma. I was in a coma for 32 days. I met a spiritual presence in my dreams that told me I was going to die. I had to pray and beg and plead and say, please. At that moment, I knew it was funny. Before I went to the coma, I thought to myself, you know, I've had a good life. I thought to myself, maybe I'll write a will. If this COVID thing affects me, well, maybe it'll, you know, maybe I'll be all, I had, you know, I was already America's Got Talent, the finalist to travel the world, a champion dancer. I was married, didn't have kids, but had a pretty successful career and thought, yeah, maybe I'm done. When I was facing face to death, I said, no, I am not done. I am absolutely not done. I will do anything to survive. And I remember the spirit telling me that, no, you're going to die. I'm sorry. And it was very painful. And I pleaded for hours until he said, okay, I'll give you a small chance, but you have to fight harder than you ever fought in your entire life. And I could tell you that my mind experienced some of that through dreams, but my body fought because my heart stopped four times. They said I was the sickest person in the hospital with COVID, and all the other people who were not as sick, many of them died. And they put me not just on a ventilator. The ventilator didn't work. They put an ECMO machine to do the work of the heart and the lungs so I could, rest. And I made it. So there's a lot to say about that, but I'm here. Yeah.
Well, you're one of the few that were blessed to make it through. I mean, because I've heard several stories, because I guess most of it's in the media, and talked to a nurse, a friend of mine that's married to a nurse, and just talking about talking about stuff that they would never be able to get out of their own minds from how bad it was, you know, at the very beginning, because not being able to prepare people, you know, for everything.
So I had one of the nurses that saw me both before, during, and afterwards. She told me she's hit disaster areas her whole career, and she's experienced nothing like this. And she said she'll never do disaster relief again. It was too traumatic. Every single person from the medical community said anytime they had a breath, they took a they would cry and then just go right back to work. So I wrote the book partly because it's not my, not just my voice. I interview the doctors, the nurses, the help staff, the physical therapists, occupational therapists, everybody. So everybody's voice is there that could share it. And, you know, we do have COVID fatigue. I make it as funny as possible. I let people know, look, near death is bad, but when you wake up and you realize your Amazon bill is not so high, that's not such a bad thing, you know? And you lose a little weight. I lost 75 pounds. That wasn't the worst. Now, mind you, the 75 pounds I lost was almost on muscle, because when you're in a coma, they eat the muscle first. Oh, I didn't know that. So I couldn't press a remote for the next month, you know? I was on channel for like all day long until the nurse would come. But, you know, it really was a transformational experience. And not just for me, but to recognize we have an amazing medical community to support us. And I know that you probably have stories of the same. It's like when there's a wonderful support system that's waiting for us when we need it. And I saw people, I'm super fortunate to recover almost all of my body and my mind. But when I was in the COVID floor in rehab, boy, I saw people barely able to move a limb. And the way that the people supported everyone's care, the amount of rehab goes in, it's just incredible these days. So the book is a tribute to that. The book is telling the story in other people's voice, and does so in both a lighthearted and serious way.
And then, and again, if you go back to where I interviewed just yesterday, Don and Hutch passed away. They were bike riding, and he had a cardiac sudden arrest, and he was dead for 18 minutes. Wow. But you wouldn't have known it interviewing these guys yesterday. They were hilarious, funny, humorous, and just like you. And I've tried to be myself. Let's don't take life too serious. I mean, cause there's a lot of things that's worse than what we may be going through. Now, according to COVID, you know, I don't know how much more worse it could have got with you. But again, if you make it out of it, one, it's try to, you know, have fun with it. Now let's move on and show people how it can be done and provide some hope and positivity for everyone else.
I do think for me, that was my experience. I think that there's nothing like a tragedy to break you out of your way of life. And it's not the best way, but certainly you have a choice. And I knew that the first month I woke up, I was just feeling blessed by God. I was feeling blessed by my community. And I thought, thank God I have a second chance to really struggle. Now, I'm a dancer. I'm an acrobatic dancer. I couldn't move my arm more than 2 inches. And I remember my dance partner saw me and said, you know what? Let me see 2 inches of dancing. And for like a month, all I would do is just this motion. Like, you know, it's not the most beautiful motion, but for me, you know, it was something, you know, it's not
throwing. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But it's like taking on, not comparing myself with the way I used to be, but comparing myself to where can I find happiness now? And a lot of that for me was writing. I wrote a few books before. I wrote another book since, and then also a COVID story. And it's been a challenge to find a passion because before contracting COVID, before going to coma, I could say I was quite lost in life. I was ready to just say I'm done. And I woke up feeling, you know, maybe I'm divorced. I didn't have kids. Maybe, you know, maybe I didn't make such great choices in life. And just having this opportunity to then have people send me love and saying, no, you are significant. The story you're telling is not an empowering story. You want to tell the story where you're a teacher of 25 years. Look at all the kids you impacted. You're a dancer. Millions of people have seen you dance. You're a performer. You uplift people. And it was an amazing mindset shift for me when I could choose, am I going to choose something that's going to bring me down or am I going to choose what's going to keep me up? And it's a very clear choice that we have in life. And I know that 1 week I was feeling pity for myself. I noticed, you know, it was this moment after a month. I said, you know what? Maybe I'm not so lucky. Yeah, I'm lucky I'm alive. But who at my age, I was 48 at the time, who at my age gets this sick? My brother has the same size as me. He was healthy. He got COVID and he was sick for a week and was fine. Why did I have what I had? And I could tell you when I felt that level of pity, it felt strong, like I need to have these thoughts, you know, but those thoughts made me depressed for a week. And after those 7 days, you know, everybody come into my room, they saw me just go pale and cold. And I knew I was cold, but I couldn't help it. I just felt mad. And I realized these thoughts are not serving me. I need to retell my story. And it was only when I started retelling my story that I found a new level of happiness.
And let me go back to two things here. One, a friend of mine, Jan. Hey, Jan, what's up? And thank you for coming in, Vegan Realist. Thank you for coming in. Hello to you as well. So, but a friend of mine, Jan, she said her dad used to tell her, it's okay to visit Pityville, but it's not okay to move in. And sometimes I think we need to go back to poor, pitiful me so we can see how far we have really come from that experience. Is one thing I think of. And also, being a finalist here, America's Got Talent, and appreciate that and congratulations for that. And so, you've had to bust your butt and have a mindset of winning, positive mindset of winning. How much of that do you think carried over into this COVID?
Everything. Everybody said I had a... I was part of the 1% of people who were recovering fast. And a lot of that was, you know, I entered into the coma with the mindset of I'm waiting to wake. You know, I was just saying, save the chicken sausage for me when I wake up. And it was based on, you know, it wasn't a belief in God, although I believe in God. It was just a belief in I shouldn't be here to begin with. Everything's going to be fine. So I went in with a positive mindset that things would be fine. When I woke up, you know, they kept telling me I was asleep for 32 days. It only feels like 4 or 5. They had to actually show me a calendar before I believed the truth. I'm sorry. I forgot the original question.
let me jump in on this one here. I'm in a wheelchair. I got my neck broke playing football when I was 19 years old. And I was in I don't know if it was a medical induced coma or they just knocked me out for 4 days. And so when I got into a regular hospital, I was in ICU for those 4 days. And so they come in and I guess checked to see if I had any brain injury from the hit and everything. And they kept asking who is the president, you know, all this stuff. You know, and then all of a sudden they say, all right, what's today's date? And I go, I don't know. I said, I know I got hurt on Sunday, September 11th. And they said, well, today's the Thursday. I go, Thursday? And so I have no idea, like you just said, about all the time it's lost. And dumb me, I went to one rehab one time and met this gentleman, spinal cord injury, plus he had was in a coma for like 6 months. Wow. And dumb me, not thinking, I go, well, what, you know, what did it feel like, you know, being in a coma for 6 months? And he says, I don't know. He said, it was like I went to sleep and woke up the next day. I said, I had no idea 6 months had gone past before I woke up. Wow. So when you say, you know, if they tell you 32 days, you go, well, it felt like 4 or 5. I mean, I can understand that. Yeah. Losing that time.
Yeah. For me, I hear people who say, I know that the medication they're putting people under for the COVID, I hear the story constantly that the patients are awake. We are dreaming. And I had salsa. I'm a salsa dancer as well. I love salsa dancing. I was salsa dancing for 32 days, 24/7, because my dance partner put salsa music on right next to my bed, had the nurse put it on and put on our performances. And I tell you, I was traveling the world, had 5-star hotels, biggest standing ovation shows. And I remember the joy of just like waking and experiencing that. And when I woke up, it seemed like, wait a second. It was the schism between that dream world and this world was a very painful, difficult experience. And they say some people, when you're in a coma, you don't want to get up. And I had a spiritual friend of mine who said she was with me spiritually. She felt my spirit was not wanting to leave God, that once you're close to God, you have a near-death experience. A lot of people will say you feel close to God. I don't remember that particular part, but she said she felt that was the case. And you feel a compulsion to stay there because it's a great feeling to be with God. And I do remember near the end, I had a very clear dream where I was in a library with a spirit that was climbing up books, putting books away, kind of like the Book of Life. And I was telling the spirit, I was like, you know, I'm going back to the world. And he looked at me funny. Why would you do that? You know, it was still that spirit world trying to hold me in. And I was like, no, I have stuff to do. And then I woke up shortly after that. And I think I tell those stories because living, partly it's the training I've always had. I work hard, but a lot of it was just wanting to live. And that's what helped me even these last, I contracted COVID back in late March. And even a year later, still physically I'm working through things and mentally it's not so easy, but without a doubt, it's the passion I have for life that I constantly return to when I feel down. What do I want to do? I want to write more. I want to still dance. I want to go back on America's Got Talent. And these are the things that carry me through, is my passion. And that's like, it's a little hard sometimes because my physical therapist always tells me, don't compare yourself to the way you used to be. Compare yourself to where you were yesterday. How much progress are you making today? And where will you be tomorrow? And, you know, right about 3 weeks ago, for the first time, I lifted my partner up over my head with my right hand, which was like a big deal. I used to be able to walk around and have a party for 2-3 minutes. But, you know, it's a good start. And my left arm, I couldn't move beyond a few inches from my hip for about 5-6 months. Now I can get it up over my head, almost there, and hold her for about maybe half a second, and she comes right down. But you know, all that came from a year's worth of work of working day by day, step by step. An important part of anybody's recovery, whether it's alcohol, whether it's recovering physically, mentally. And I would say the part of being an athlete, which is take one step at a time and just work towards your bigger goal. You know, when I was on America's Got Talent, I was on season 4. If you look up Paradiso Dance, my partner, she's wife at the time. We're divorced now. Love each other, but things didn't work out. But back then, she's 100 pounds. She lifts me over her back. It's our big trick. And we did that in season 4. The crowd gave us a standing ovation 15 seconds into the routine. The story I'd love to tell is we actually tried out in season 2. We did the exact same routine in season 2. 10,000 auditions in front of Jacob Javits Center. People were auditioning. We didn't get beyond the associate producer the first round. They saw our routine and they said, we'll call you. And I waited for that call for 90 days, called them back every day saying, are you calling me yet? Are you calling me yet? Until I finally gave up. It's like, well, I don't think they're calling us. And we did the exact same routine 2 years later, not giving up, maybe small little tweaks here or there. And that was when they said, okay, we're ready for you. We want to take you to the top. And then, so part of it is like never giving up. Part of it is, well, that part is never giving up. And a part of it is having a fighting spirit of doing what you want. For me, my biggest passion in life is acrobatic dance after dessert. And I really just that's what I pursued, and so that helped me quite a lot. Sorry, that was very long winded, but
no, you're doing great. And David, don't hold back, man. Come out and tell us it has something to do with perseverance. Hey, I got to work my name in there, Professor Perseverance. Got to work it in. So, all right, yeah. That's to be able to be successful in life, to overcome any adversity. One is to go ahead, don't give up, tweak, right. Like you said. Tweak some things. You know, we set goals, baby steps to get where we need to go from there. So same thing, tweak it until it's right, or throw it out and start something new and tweak. So it's just a continuous evolution of building it up from there.
Yeah, I think perseverance, when I think about perseverance, I think about tweaking. It's right. It's taking any failure and noticing it's not a failure. It's just another opportunity to figure out how to get it right. And in acrobatic dance, I can't tell you, I had 22 partners before I met my dance partner, Zoe Klein. And most of them, we did some level of good shows, but it was only when I met her. And that was perseverance for sure. And when we did the show, I could say it's funny. They show, I don't think they really, when you watch these competitive shows, they don't show you how hard it is behind the scene. They have us like,
oh no. Yeah. Yeah. That's just like sports. You don't get to see the practice and training before the competition to know that. So
yeah, it's really tough. And it's not only they keep you long hours and interviews and waiting and they stress you out. And it's on purpose to build drama. Then I could tell you one of the funny stories is, you know, when I was on season 4, I actually never seen the show. I just heard about it. And so we're like right below the stage and we're here. We hear buzzers go off and we think, my partner's like, Dave, what is that? And I'm like, I think they're buzzers. We didn't know you could be buzzed out. And if that wasn't bad, then we heard. Yeah. Then we heard. Boos, like thousands of people booing people off the stage. And then we have this tension of, oh my God, are they going to set us up? Because they set you up. They have people who are terrible and they go on stage thinking they're going to be great. It's like, oh my God, are we being set up? Fortunately, we didn't know, you know, but we said, let's give it a try. Worst comes to worst, we look like a fool in front of millions of people. It won't be the first time. But
That's right.
But fortunately, you know, we did our producer said, hey, do you burst? First trick, your best trick first, get the crowd behind you. And we did. We nailed that first routine. Beautiful, beautiful experience. My mother was in the audience, could barely move with 2 broken knees. She ran down the aisle saying, that's my son. Security had to grab her. You know, like you can't bum rush the stage. And I was like, you know, 20 seconds into the routine. And I was like, huh, she could walk after all. It just takes enough motivation, you know. And
that's right.
It was a wonderful experience. We got a lot of work from it. We did 4 rounds. And, you know, it's funny. The next round, we did this move. If you watch, if you look at Paradiso Dance, not the first one, but the second one where there's this like hazel, drifty, cloudy background, I pick up my partner with 2 hands on her ankles from the side, and I lift her up like this. Basically the hardest move possible. I know my circus friends said the only move you did that we don't understand is that move. And my circus teacher taught me that 4 years ago, saying you'll never ever learn this move. It's impossible. It's only done with 50-pound, maybe 60-pound kids. My partner's 100 pounds. And I said, I'm going to do it. So for 1 year, I did the trick from 3 feet off the ground. After 2 years, I did it from 2 feet off the ground. After 1 year, then I did it with 1 foot off the ground. And right before the routine, you know how many times I did the trick before going on stage? Successfully? Once. I only did it once. But my teacher said, listen, Dave, when you have millions of people watching you, you're going to make it work.
You get that adrenaline pumping.
Now, I'm not sure if it's the adrenaline, and I'm not sure if the prayer I gave, I prayed in that moment like nobody's business. And the move worked. She went up. I had a faith healer actually heal my back because I was trying to do the move beforehand in practice, busted my back. And then she came and it all worked out. And it's funny, it's a little funny to hear, it took me 10 years after I learned the move to actually know how to do the move every single time. But at the time, it was a little bit of luck. So is that perseverance? Yeah, man, I was not going to And it came from passion. I just wanted that move more than anything else. I knew every trick we did was good, but the producers say, look, every round you go, you need to do something more intense. So I said, all right, I'm going to do this trick that I know almost nobody knows how to do. Seen it once with a kid. Nobody else can do it. And we did it, and David Hasselhoff loved it, and Ellen DeGeneres loved it, Sharon Osbourne loved it, and it was one of the best feelings to do. And you can see, if you watch the video, you'll see me smiling halfway through the routine, because I was like, ah, I know we got it, you know?
And, that's right.
We did have a backup plan if it didn't go up, you know? You know, sometimes you gamble and
there's no plan B here, no plan B.
No, so, there was a plan B. The plan B.
No, there wasn't. Don't let no one know that. Just say, no, this is all or nothing.
It was all over. Yeah, we've done that trick afterwards where she went up halfway and then we brought her down, and I made it look like that's what we were trying to do, you know, and that was the plan B, right?
There you go. Hey, Jay, thank you for coming in, buddy. Appreciate you just hopping in here. Today we're interviewing, talking with David Paris, the author of A COVID Story. Hey, Jay, he's been a month in a coma and 88 days in the hospital with COVID, and was able to win on the other side. Now, let's go back to one thing I'm a big believer in, and I think no one ever listened to me, that's for sure, but I think our nurses and therapists ought to be making more money than the doctors. Doctors come in for 20 minutes, oh, you're doing good. I appreciate that. And then tell the nurse, draw the blood, get the blood pressure, do everything else, and they're with you, you know, maybe not the full 8 hours a day, but they're popping in 10 times a day, where the doctor come at 4:30 in the morning to wake you up to tell you to go back to bed. That's right. So I think these nurses and therapists, the nurses' assistants, aides, whatever you want to call them, I think they ought to be getting more money than some of these doctors. So
yeah, the nurses for me were I never knew how important nurses were. But when you're overnight, when you're incapacitated physically and you're relying on them, it's not just that they check your health. It's not that they give you your pills. It's not that they're giving you your shots. The emotional love and support that they gave me carried me through the hardest times. And I could say I was there for 3 months. I never met a nurse that didn't give me a love that helped supported me. And I met maybe 30, 40 nurses. And I know that they were all stressed out. And for me, it's not just what they do medically, it's what they do emotionally. And when you can rely on that, when you're alone, especially as a COVID patient, you don't get visitors. You know, that's all you have.
Yes. You don't get that. So
no.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you a quick one. When I was in the hospital for my spinal cord injury, I was in there for 3 months, and talking about the nurses come in, oh, they were all great and everything like that. But I always got to bring up this one, Vicky. Oh, I was in love with Vicky. Oh, she was a good one. So she ended up moving away and stuff. Vicky, if you ever catch my podcast, you need to catch up with me so we can catch up together. So she was a good one. But again, Randy was a good one. And I can't think of all the others, but they were a bunch of good ones as well. I'm not sure if I would have made it as easy as I did if I didn't have a great emotional supporting group as well. So Randy come in, and then he nicknamed us both Bubba. I was Bubba 1 and he was Bubba 2. So it was good.
I can tell you, it's funny. I would watch, sometimes I would ask them just watch a TV show with me. You know, we would talk politics. We would anything. And it was just when you're in ICU, usually it's one nurse for every two patients or something like this. And so they're really with you all the time. And it's special.
Yes, it is. And again, to have a good one. Now, don't get me wrong, there are some bad ones out there. I've seen a few that I question to. I wouldn't say it to them. They wouldn't embarrass them, but I'm questioning, are you in the right field? But yeah, thankfully, there's more that belong there than the other way. So,
absolutely. Yeah.
All right, definitely. David, now you want to spread your message and get out there. And again, with your book, we'll pop it up again here. Book right there. Hey, people, again, on the podcast, just go grab A COVID Story by David Paris. So, David, tell us how people can get a hold of you.
And absolutely. From there. You can look up acovidstory.com. You can go to davidparisbooks.com or on Amazon. It's listed under A COVID Story. And you can reach me in any of those ways.
And I'll put those in the show notes. And I tell people, easiest way, do the old Googling thing. Google David Paris and America's Got Talent, David Paris, and you'll find them that way as well. So,
and I could say, you know, anybody who would like a free digital copy, please just email me at info@davidparisbooks.com. It's my pleasure to share it. It's a pro-vaccine message. I actually wanted COVID before I got it. And I thought to myself, I'm 48, I'll be fine. I'm in decent shape. And that's not how the way things turned out. And I think when you read, you read my story, it's an easy read. I make it fun, I make it fast, and you get lots and lots of voices. It's an oral history, but you get a sense of, you get a sense of how serious it can be. And it's also, if you know nurses, lots of nurses like my book because it's very, very pro nurse. And it's also a lot about mental health. And a whole chapter I spend with my therapist talking about how to confront death, how to look at what it means to live again. And I think so far people loved it. So I think it'll be great out there.
Yes, sir. And I want to go back here for a minute that at least twice you mentioned that, at the beginning of COVID with this spirit telling you, you're going home, buddy. You know, we're not stepping back into the world. And you were at one point going, hey, I've done well. I've done all right. I'm good to go. Then when it seemed like that knock was there,
that's right.
David, it's that time. And then you're screaming, going, no, I want to do more. There's more I got there I can do. And, you know, it's amazing how we want to live when it's time to die.
That's
and
right.
It's amazing. And we ought to be living like that all the time to be able to. And there's so many of us that waste this opportunity until, it really is too late.
Yeah, I think a lot of I felt complacent. I felt like I did what I was supposed to do. And only when the fear of God is in you, then you start reevaluating everything.
Yeah, because when I got hurt, one of the doctors told me that if I wasn't an athlete, I probably would have died from my injury. And so I was going to me, okay, I'm ready to go, but no, I'm glad I'm here. That's 37 years ago now, I think, 38. And I'm glad I'm here and was able to start this podcast and YouTube channel and get out and speak and things like that. And so and get to meet people like you, to help spread hope, message, powerful inspiration, motivation to share with other people to help them know that they can move through difficult times.
Yeah, like for sure. I'm at my happiest right now. I'm meeting you. I'm talking on this podcast. I could say for sure, on any single day, there are down moments. And I know, like you said, those moments pass. And when you feel it, I feel it. And I feel a depth of pain that I've never felt in my life before. I felt more pain in a day than I felt in my entire life. And it's not something that has gone away. When your body goes through something so severe, it takes a while to overcome that if you ever do. And I open up my story to so many people who have similar experiences. And it's just to share that if people are struggling, I know that struggle. I still have issues in my breathing. I still have anxiety that comes up. And you're not alone. And for sure, what I've learned is I'm not alone. And when I learn that I am not alone, I can just feel it. It's going to go by. That's perseverance. That's perseverance. And then still feel, like you said, feel the pity a little bit and then move right back to things you want to do big in your life.
And you gave a good earlier, which you were talking, and I don't want to paraphrase everything, but one time I was getting out of my car to go to class and it was raining. So I had to put my chair together in the rain and I get inside. Nobody offered to help me get inside or anything, but they watched from the dry building inside. And one guy, he goes, I couldn't do what you're doing. And I said, well, man, you don't know because you're not in my situation. I said, because you have, but you have the same choices I have in life. Neither you do it or you don't do it. So if I don't do it, I can stay at home, lay in bed, let someone else feed me like a vegetable, water me like a plant. And I can watch all the TV that they're watching because they're controlling the remote, not me. I said, or I can do the best I can, get out and work hard and do the best and have fun at it and see what else happens.
I got a question for you, Professor of Perseverance.
Yes, sir.
What do you say? I know you do talking or speaking engagements. What do you say to people who haven't gotten through what we've gotten through to get that same message of making the most of what you have? Because in some ways, I see what I have as a gift to be able to have a second chance at life. And I want to be able to share with others to have that same motivation without having the same danger.
Well, and you said you have your heart stopped four times. And so, you know, technically you're on borrowed time now, right?
That's exactly right. Yes.
And so, you know, your expiration date finally came up. And so now you're able to, you know, take this borrowed time and help other people. I try to tell people we're all going through something. I don't care how big or little it is. You know, what we may think is trivial may be everything to the moon and back for somebody. Okay. So for an example, I tell, you know, not me, but you, David, say you get up in the middle of the night, 3 a.m, you're thirsty or got to go to the bathroom, and you get up and you don't want to turn the light on. And then all of a sudden you kick the door or the wall. And now what did you do? You hurt your toe. You miss an hour of sleep because your toe's throbbing, but you go back to sleep finally. For what if this person here got up in the middle of the night, they kicked the door or the wall? And what if they have a brittle bone disease? Now they've shattered their bone. All right. Or what if they're a hemophiliac? Now they're bleeding internally. Or what if they're that progeria? You know, the people that age fast, they're like 10 years old, but they look like they're 80. And so I try to tell people, I don't care if it's important and difficult for you. I don't care how trivial it is. I don't discount it. So, you know, so I tell people they ought to work on. I tell people work on the ABCs, you know. The Michael Jackson, ABC. I said, I don't know the rest of it. I just know ABC. All right. Let's accept the adversity. The sooner we accept it, the sooner we get out of denial, the sooner we can move on. B, begin battling. That means find people who's been through what you're going through and get them to help you. Get an organization, association, get something. You know, everything's on the tip of our fingers in this wide world web now. Find some information that's going to help you. So B, begin battling. And then C, now we've got all this information. We've accepted adversity. Now C, let's go conquer the challenge.
Yeah. Wow. That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Oh, appreciate that. So, and then I like to tell other people this. I go, you know, when you're riding, what do people say? You can't have the rainbow without the storm. So when you're going through your difficulty and you realize you're on the other side of the good part now, you can enjoy it. So I tell other people, when you see the light at the end of the tunnel and you know it's not a freight train coming, you're in good shape. You know, sometimes before we can smell the rose, we have to walk through that fertilizer crap, don't we, to be able to get to it. So, you know, I just tell people, whatever you're going through, you don't have to like it. You don't have to enjoy it. But the sooner you can move past it, the sooner you can heal, the sooner you can start living a better life.
One of the things that transformed for me, and I mentioned that I talk about this in the book, I had a dream because I was dancing for day and weeks upon weeks. And in this one moment, I finally had the opportunity. I was, finalist. I won many championships, but I never achieved the highest level. I wanted to be a Cirque du Soleil star. There are a few other titles I wanted to get. And in the dream, there was a diamond in the bottom of the world. And I finally got it. I said, I just needed to bring it to the top of the world. And on the way, I knew I'd have to run people over to do it. And in that moment, I became totally self-obsessed, not caring. I'm a pretty caring guy. I've been a school teacher for 30 years, teaching about thousands of people. But in this moment, it was the worst part of me that was just, I'm going to do it for me. And I got to the top. I was in a convertible, hot, hot woman. And I thought to myself, I finally got whatever I wanted. And in that moment, a spirit appeared with a big sword, chopped me in half. And from that moment forward, the spirit introduced me to all these multiple universes. And I received so much spiritual knowledge in that moment of my shallowness of what I was seeking for pleasure my whole life. Always I was seeking for that validation externally from getting things to find fulfillment. And it was only that moment where I was sliced in half that I gave it up in the dream, in the moment. And 1 year later, I still, although I'm still going to go back to America's Got Talent, but it doesn't rule me. It doesn't drive me. It becomes an expression of me. And I could say that one of the areas that I've spiritually grown, in my opinion, my dance partner said that I stopped pushing her so hard now, a little bit. But I now seek different levels of pleasure. I have my, I was telling you a little bit earlier, I'm helping caretaking my dance partner's 19-month-old. And this boy, he loves putting his hand between two cushions and laughing. And I've changed my level of what happiness is. It isn't going to be something in the future to make me happy. It's what can I find that gives me pleasure? What can I find in connection to other people? And I could tell you that the change happened because of that dream. But I didn't need that dream to change. And that was a lesson I really wish I had much earlier, that I was always trying to experience something beautiful on the outside. And I didn't find the beauty with me, in me, and what I wanted to do in the moment, that it wasn't about trying to achieve something. It was trying to have happiness as I try to achieve it. So while I go on America's Got, I talked to a producer a few weeks ago. I'm going to go on next year. I'm still going to do what I want to do. I still have goals, but I'm not doing it to get happy. I'm going to be happy as I do it. And that was a spiritual change that I've made.
We need to live in the here and now and be happy and grateful, thankful for what we're doing and going. Do you think maybe part of this dream may be, and of course, my doctor is not in psychology or psychiatrist, but
just perseverance.
That's perseverance. There we go. Thank you. But you think could be part of, you know, you're talking, you finally grab that diamond, you're going to the top. And not that I'm thinking it's being selfish or anything, but then you get up there.
It was selfish. I ran people over in the car. I did.
Hey, to win the Super Bowl, somebody's got to run over somebody. So I don't know if it's selfish, but I mean, your dream may have been. But I'm thinking, but then did the spirit come thinking, you're going, now I got this, what's next? I've reached the pinnacle, what next? You know, and then he opened everything up to you to show you what's next or what's possible or what you're missing out on by going for the trivial.
Yeah, I think if I go back into that moment, it was almost like the spirit was the spirit of God, in my opinion. And that spirit, when it cut me, it was angry at me. It was angry at who I became and what decisions I made to get the diamond to the top. And it was more of a division of, you fool, you spent so much of this time doing this. This is what the world is really about. This is what the universe really is. And that definitely is in line with the way I live my life. I'm a giver, I give a lot, but if you really ask me most of my life, I really cared about my own success and was self-driven. And when I woke up, that's when I felt it the worst. I thought to myself, here I am alone in a pain. The pain you feel when you wake up after COVID is not true for everybody, but I can tell you for me, it was horrific. The loneliest I've ever been in my life. So much so that I feel bad for not calling my mother enough, you know, and I'm calling her now every day. And so, and that's serious. That's not so easy for me. So it's easier for others than, but for me, I woke up so clear that I had spent so much time and I was reaping what I was sowing. I reap what I sowed because I spent all this time on my own glory and not in the glory of other people, somewhat, but not really. And it was a promise that I made to myself when I woke up. Yeah, I'm not going to live my life like that again. And I haven't.
Oh, amen. So I believe we're here on this big old ball of dirt. One thing is not everything. One thing is we need to help other people when we can. And, you know, I tell people we can't do it all. We can't do everything to help every organization, everybody we see, because then we're shortchanging our own self. And then if we're not taking care of ourselves, we can't help anybody. So we have to pick and choose to be able to help. And when we can, like, for instance, if my neighbor needs her yard mowed, I can't mow the yard, but I can find someone to do it for her or pay someone to do it for her. So, you know, but it's a trade off. And so I think, and I'm like you, I was real bad younger on got to have the accolades. I got to have the trophies to show what I did. I got to have. And now I'm older. I still like to hear people say, your book helped me.
It's nice.
You know, just so I know that I really did help someone, but I don't have to know it, and it's still okay with me. And that was brought to my attention when I was graduating from college. The president came up to me and says, "Hey, you got to remember, somebody's always watching you, and they're going to get something from you, whether it's your experience, your expertise, your drive to do whatever. They're going to learn from you, whether you know it or not." And so I had to keep reminding myself that I don't have to have this accolade, but even though it is nice to know that you are helping.
That's right. It's the way that you do things. So it's a process. It's not a destination life. It's a way that you're living life. And that was a big shift for me. The other shift is accepting the world the way it is. I like when you said the ABC. And that first A is very tough, because I do think constantly our mind is such that we're always thinking about what should or should not be in the world. And then that I think everybody has that. And then to some degree, when you get hit with something tragic, a near-death experience, a physical or any sort of thing that you really think shouldn't have happened, there, the mind goes in overdrive about why did this happen to me? And it's actually super not useful. Like, again, you can sit in pityness, but the moment, and for me, articulating the acceptance was easiest and clearest when I can identify all my should and shouldn't thoughts. So I'm a nonviolent communication trainer. That's Marshall Rosenberg's work about seeing the world through people's what your universal needs that everybody wants in the world. And in that, I would try as best as possible to notice and anytime what is my should or shouldn't thought. So for today, I got into a conflict with a waiter, and then the waiter, my first thought, he shouldn't be treating me that way. And then I was thinking, well, you know what? And maybe he did this because he's needing some shared reality. Everybody wants shared reality. He's needing some respect. And maybe he felt I didn't respect him in that way. And then what do I need? I need some also, I also need the same thing. I need some respect too, you know? And it's an understanding. And seeing that world out of that way comes, so finding acceptance is hard, because sometimes we say we should accept something. And even the should accept, it's not real acceptance. Acceptance is things as they are. And then when the should or shouldn't thoughts come down, or anything that's pulling us away of what reality is, it's looking at why am I doing that? And then pulling into what are we really needing at that moment?
Yeah, I agree. Again, we don't have to like it. And the quicker, like I said, the quicker we can adjust to it, the better, quicker we can start healing. And like you said, it's easy to say, I've accepted, let's move on. And then in the back of the subconscious, you're going, hell no, you haven't. And and you keep reliving it. And so you haven't really accepted. You're just going through the motions and hoping things will go your way.
So how do you share getting to that deeper level of acceptance? Because I do think about that a lot. What does it mean? Because a lot of people pretend to accept or pretend to move on, but they're still haunted by things.
And again, I'm glad you brought that in to me, because I just finished my other book here 2 months ago. It's called Your Past Doesn't Have a Future, But You Do. So create your future today and have a mini course with it. Go to my website, professorofperseverance.com, and get a free mini course and a free ebook on Your Past Doesn't Have a Future, But You Do. So that's it. You know, we want to hang on the good old days back then. Or, you know, someone says, well, I was an alcoholic and I got a DUI. I've been arrested. I'm a drug addict. I beat my dog one time and the neighbor saw me, you know, whatever it is. And then they're going, well, I can't do no better in life because all this is dragging me down, instead of letting go of all that and trying to move forward. And so if they haven't fully accepted, they're just going to keep weighing themselves down emotionally is what it's doing. And, you know, then until they figure it out, they're not going to move anywhere. So I got this one friend, a great story. I put it in my book. He has his mindset. Now, give it. He was brought up poor. His mom and stepfather didn't raise him. His grandparents raised him. And grandparents, you know, they just did the best they could. But he had this mindset about, I don't know, maybe 12, 15 years ago, Tennessee has the big lottery, and it's the first time it's going to be $500 million, half a billion. All right. I see this friend of mine, and here's his mindset. Because he has been locked up in jail for DUI. He has gotten in trouble for stealing, locked up. So his mentality is, I'll never get a good job because my record. And I go, bull, man, murderers have gotten out and gotten better jobs than you. You know, you're holding yourself back. But here's his mindset. When that lottery got to $500 million, $500 million, he said to me, boy, I'd love to win that. But if I did, they being the food stamps and welfare office, would take my food stamps away. Nah. I said, what? You can't live off $500 million. You have to have that $191 food stamps a month. Yeah. So that's his thinking. He'll never do anything in life with that mindset and not improving.
Yeah, I think that's what I addressed in the beginning of the story, that we have a choice on what mindset we're going to induce. And I tell an old Cherokee legend about inside of us have two wolves, one that's angry and bitter and such, and one that's going to be love and kind. And his grandson asked, which wolf wins this battle inside of you? And the grandfather said, the one you feed. And this is clearly like a choice of, we all the time get to choose what story we're telling. When the mindset runs without us noticing that we can choose it, it will run us in a way that may not be positive. But when we can identify it and choose what works, that worked for me. I was not, and still to this day, sometimes I get upset. And I can note, like you said, notice it, accept it. I figure out what the B, what's the B that you said?
Begin
the battle and then conquer, right? Yeah.
And conquer.
Yeah, so accept first, notice it, and then move on to what works. And they say, I don't know how much of it was mindset. I don't know how much of it was my body and how much of it was will. But my recovery happened much faster than anybody else, they said. And I do believe a lot of it was mindset.
I believe a lot of it's mindset, and then the rest of the body and emotions and spiritually all followed along with it. Couldn't break it down in percentage, but it's a total package. And whereas the mentality would be the largest percentage from there. That's what I would think. So
there's a guy, Hal Elrond, that recovered. He's an inspirational writer. He writes the Miracle Morning. He says that, you know, for his cancer, 10% of the people survive. And he said he's 100% sure he's going to be part of that 10%.
That's right. There you go. That's right. 100% chance for sure for that 10%. That's right. So, and it's Zig Ziglar, you know, he was saying, you know, being positive doesn't mean trouble doesn't come your way, challenges don't come your way, but it means that you can handle the situation better than being negative.
Yeah, that's great.
So from there. All right, today we've had David Paris, okay, the author again of, let's get it up here one last time, A COVID Story and Big American Talent finalist here today. So, David, appreciate you coming in and sharing positive message for everyone here. And if you could just finish it out for one last thing here, that I asked my guest, that we know people are hurting and struggling today. If you can give them some type of motivation, inspiration, powerful message that can help them get through today, that would be awesome if you can do that.
Yes, I would use your message. If you're hurting, just know you're not alone. Reach out to the people who are. Reach out to people you love. Know that it's temporary. It's going to move. When you feel that there's hopelessness is a tricky thing. Because when you feel hopeless, you can't get out of hopelessness. But it is a mindset that even if you can't get out of it in the moment, give yourself time. Give yourself the love. If you can't figure it out, get the help of other people who can support you to get out of it. And you will move out of it. It's going to take time. Hopelessness is not reality. It's a feeling that's going to move.
Amen, brother. And I like what you said about love yourself, because if you don't love yourself, how can you expect anyone else to? So, yeah. All right, David, thank you for coming in. Hey, everybody else is coming in on the replay. Hey, be sure to share this out with someone that's going now. Again, it doesn't have to be someone that's going through COVID and won, or sadly COVID lost with the family members, or you don't have just spinal cord injury. The message of overcoming and providing hope and perseverance will help them as well. Thank you, everybody, for coming in today. Do something today, tomorrow, something next week that's going to help you persevere past your paralysis.
Thanks for listening to the Professor of Perseverance podcast for motivation, inspiration, and encouragement. For more information, go to Facebook at Professor of Perseverance. Visit the website at professorofperseverance.com and view the YouTube channel, Dr. James Perdue, Professor of Perseverance.